I think everyone has shame, period. But because men are privileged, because men seemingly have the upper hand, and they do in many arenas, we're taught not to complain, not to talk about it, not to even reveal it to ourselves, and certainly not to other people. So we get trapped inside our shame because we can't talk or communicate about it.
That's the coach, Rob Kendall.
We're back to talking about male shame on this episode of The Gender Knot, the podcast where we untangle the new masculinity and femininity. We're your hosts. I'm Nastran Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And I'm Jonathan Freeman. We're going to talk about the roots of male shame and what to do about it.
There's definitely a causal effect in terms of boys not being permitted to express when they're sad, when they're angry, when they're unhappy, because again, we're the privileged class. And that causes the cancer that keeps growing and growing as we get older, and we lack the ability to truly process our emotions.
This is The Gender Knot. In case you're new, I'm going to quickly run you through how this show works. This is the podcast where we try to figure out new gender roles for our modern era. So each week, my co-host Jonathan and I, we take a question or dilemma around gender, and we see if we can kind of figure it out a little bit and maybe even come to some sort of a solution. So I'm Naz, I'm in London, Jonathan's in DC.
Though not today. Today I'm in North Carolina.
Okay, so before we get to this week's episode, we're going to do a little bit of quick housekeeping. We have Gender Knot t-shirts on sale. If you're into the podcast and you want to support us, keep us going, buy a t-shirt just like you would with your favorite band. So they're made by the people at Tee Public, who make print-on-demand t-shirts, and they're really fantastic. So we've linked to them in the notes to this show.
Also, please write to us. We may do an episode on your questions. We've been getting lots of questions, and we love getting your mail.
I know a lot of you have been writing to us. We do read and respond to everything. We're just a little bit behind right now. So if you've written and we haven't gotten back to you, we're not ignoring you or anything. So this week, we're going to go back to our guest, Rob Kendall, who we heard from a few weeks ago. We're talking about male shame again. Rob is a coach and consultant, and he's a founder of One Taste. They're the people behind Orgasmic Meditation. Rob also hosts the fantastic podcast Tough Love. That's T-U-F-F-L-O-V-E, where he talks to guests and the audience about a range of important life topics. Do check it out and subscribe. So yeah, Rob and I had another chat about male shame, and this time we were talking very much about the roots of male shame and where it comes from, because I think especially as women, we're very aware that men have a lot of shame, but it's kind of like, what are the reasons behind it, how to combat it? That's kind of where it gets tricky.
One of the interesting things that I think I'd like to highlight for folks was the comment about how men do not know necessarily, haven't been acculturated by society to sort of be able to deal with shame and be able to deal with things that are lacking, and that every way, you know, we're supposed to have it all together, and we don't.
It is interesting hearing these sorts of comments, though, because while I am sympathetic to men, I'm like, women have shame as well, and women get shamed, and you're not supposed to talk. And a woman who, you know, talks about her experience as being whiny, she's being complainy, she's being weak. So I don't know, it's interesting seeing how the genders deal with shame. It just kind of manifests very differently in men and women, I think.
Absolutely. But maybe perhaps since, you know, we're both talking about different perspectives of each gender experiencing shame, maybe perhaps the problem is just as a society in general, how we deal with shame. And it seems like maybe each gender has its own specific manner of poorly handling it, but it seems like something, if both genders are having a problem, then maybe it's a bigger, you know, it's a bigger societal problem in how we approach shame, and maybe that should be the conversation.
Yeah, but I do think the manner in which it's dealt with is really different.
Absolutely.
The thing that I see is that sort of from a young age, men aren't supposed to really express their experience, which that is a way of telling someone that you don't matter. And then what happens is that men often shame women from what men themselves are cut off from. That's where the dynamic becomes quite tricky. I guess it's this whole thing of like men externalize their shame, whereas women tend to internalize it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So let's get to the interview.
We still think in a lot of societies, men still have more privileges overall. Why do men have shame? Or how is their shame unique and different and sort of tied in with the male experience?
I think everyone has shame, period, because we're part of a society that gives us very rigid ways acceptable ways for us to be in the world. So why would men be eliminated from this list? But just like you said, because men are privileged, because men seemingly have the upper hand, and they do in many arenas, we're taught not to complain, not to talk about it, not to even reveal it to ourselves, and certainly not to other people. So we get trapped inside our shame because we can't talk or communicate about it.
What do men have shame about, though? What are the kind of roots of male shame?
Well, society is the roots of male shame, compounded by a different form of mothering, different form of parenting, parental shame, grandparental shame, media. If you look around it, we live in what I like to call the society of disapproval, where everything you do is wrong. We're not smart enough. We're too fat. We're too lazy. We want too much. Like, my male shame started off with my desire for food, which impacted my mother with a bulimic grandmother. And so all of a sudden, my desire for food triggered her shame. And so I was censored around my desire for food, which then later impacted me with my desire for women and sex and other things.
What about today? What are the messages that you see sort of younger men or teenagers and stuff getting?
Well, the main thing is that young men are not knowing their role in the world. Really, up into the previous generation, there was a distinct kind of role that guys could play. And it was based on, say, the John Wayne, the Mad Men, you know, in society. It was sort of like the nuclear family, and the guy knew what to play. But what happened in the last 15, 20 years is the dumbing down of the guy in media, or the lessening, or he's an action hero, but he also has emotional problems. And so the message is that men really are good for very few things, getting less important in society, and so they're not sure who to be. We've also had the impact of the rise of free porn, which happened around 2008. There's this great audiobook by John Ransom talked about the impact of free porn. And so society is really getting tweaky for men to know who they should be and how they should act in today's world.
But how is free porn impacting this?
Wow. So this audiobook by John Ransom, which I listened to, really changed. And so the impact has been significant. The butterfly effect. And it's talking about how porn has always been around, but very difficult to get. You'd have to pay, or you'd have to wait long downloads. And then what happened in 2000, 2008 is that porn became really present. And so guys, with their addictive hunter-like nature, they gamified porn, and with the free access to it, started to affect them socially, biologically, and their way to interact with women. Like, there was a really interesting statistic on this audiobook how teenage pregnancy has dropped significantly with the advent of free porn, but also erectile dysfunction for young men 18 to 24 has shot through the roof because we're getting so numb from watching free porn.
But is free porn, is this sort of addiction to porn, is that causing male shame, or is that sort of where men are going if they feel ashamed about, I don't know, who they are, their standing, their sexual desires? Like, is it a refuge? Is porn like a refuge for where you go if you've got shame?
Yes. And a co-creator. It's not like one causal effect. It's like the snowball effect. Mm-hmm. Men feel desire and want experience and want novelty and want different ideas and see and feel different things. And they just have to go to their browser. They have to go to their smartphone. And all of a sudden, any category of any different sex act, you know, thousands of different categories, just at your fingertips, available. And so what boys and men are doing are going into porn on some level feeling shame because we know there's something off, but then getting addicted to it, and then the shame is keeping us in, like, and all of a sudden it's entwined, our shame and the use of free porn.
So I want to step back a second. So I'm not male, so I can't say if this is the case or not, but from kind of what I see and the stuff I read and interactions and stuff, it kind of largely appears that a lot of male shame is linked to not having your experiences validated from an early age. And I mean this sort of like having to fit into a box and not really having your emotional life be something that's seen as important, you know, like the whole inner world being sort of shunned a little bit from quite an early age. Now, I'm quite interested in this because it's kind of like, how do men try to deal with that in a way that, how do they sort of even begin to go there?
Were you talking about the bias against what's called emotional intelligence, the bias against our ability to explore and emote and have our feelings? Great documentary, The Mask We Live In, just basically describing how boys are told not to show feelings, don't cry, don't be a pussy, be a man up. All these messages to be accepted in the social pack means shunning and cutting away from their feminine side, feminine being weak for a boy, and we don't build really good connection to our emotional intelligence, and we don't know how to process what's inside. So there's definitely a causal effect in terms of boys not being permitted to express when they're sad, when they're angry, when they're unhappy, because again, we're the privileged class, and that causes the cancer that keeps growing and growing as we get older, and we lack the ability to truly process our emotions.
But how do men sort of go there? Because, I mean, things that I see, one form of men trying to deal with that is through the women in their lives, and that, I think, can be problematic on many levels. Yeah, how do men sort of go there? And maybe that sounds like a weird question, but it's kind of like if you've never been taught to go there, I mean, how do you do that?
If you're lucky, you find a group of friends that enable you to have your emotions, and that does happen. I don't want to say like all men this is happening to. We're talking really kind of the general main statistics. So like I had a group of friends that really allowed for emotions and allowed for friendship and allowed for intimacy, but that's not the norm. So if you're lucky, you have a group of friends that validate your right to have these feelings. Or like you said, you get in relationship with a strong woman who basically says, you know, you have to show up both with your masculine and your feminine, your strong side and your emotional side, because I want a full relationship. And the man says, okay, yes, I'll learn to deal with my feelings. I'll read and take workshops. I'll talk. But what happens to most is they basically stay in their ego, stay in their status, and go from relationship to relationship, or stay in an unemotional relationship where emotions aren't truly shared. So there is the gambit, but I think majority of men still as adults do not feel safe to fully process and reveal all their emotions.
And what needs to change for them to feel safe to go there?
It takes permission and it takes approval. So permission is really just the overt safe container inside a family unit or in a relationship or inside a genders group. For example, when I run men's groups, I ran an organization where we had gender groups, which was split between, you know, male identified and female identified. And apparently the female identified, all they did was talk about sex. And all that was talked in the men's group, the male identified group, was feelings. So, you know, guys would just process their feelings and process their feelings. And so it's, you know, permission and a container to reveal, and then approval. And if you're in a relationship with a man just learning to deal with his feelings, the patience of his partner, whatever gender that is so important, and saying, you can do it. I'm here. You're doing it right. That's the best way to keep inviting out those things that have been so locked up their entire lives.
So when you coach men, what are the things you do to help them go there? And also, I'm thinking a little bit about... I'm kind of thinking of when I first started seeing a therapist, and I was quite splurgy on him, but you know, he was saying how it depends with some people, it takes ages to even like get them to open up enough. So I sometimes wonder about that as well, because like sometimes when people are like, oh, just go see a therapist, it's like, yeah, but like if you're really defended, like how does that sort of Pandora's box get opened in the first place? Like what are techniques you use or things that you do with men that you coach?
I have a process that I use that's coming and described a lot in my book, but I'll just kind of give you the high level at this point. So the first is, for any issue, is to confront, to just say, whew, there's something going on, or I keep losing relationships with amazing women and they say I'm not emotional, not available enough, and I have no idea what that means. And so the confronting of the issue, the saying, wow, there's something I want to get better at or something up level, or this is stopping me. Like just saying there's something going on, that's first. The second is what I call investigation, to do research about that. You know, we're so blessed to have the Google and all the resources and amazing books and amazing YouTube videos and pretty much and Facebook groups and anything you're interested in, you can find some information. Now the information might be skewed, but go out and investigate to see what's out there and get some clues, like why am I stunted from my emotions, or what is it about adult children of alcoholics that has me scared, or why do I have bisexual feelings, and you know, what do I do about them? Go out and investigate and research what's out there. The third step is what I call commit, and this is, I think, the most important step. And in committing, you're saying, I am going to commit X amount of time, X amount of dollars, X amount of energy, X amount of attention to working through this challenge. And that could be one day a month. That could be 1 hour a day. It's committing to yourself that no matter what, you're going to go forth and take a look. The fourth step is what I call implementing with accountability and the right to modify. And what that is once you've committed to change, creating a practice, and maybe that's with a therapist or a coach or a friend, you create a practice in order to work through the problem. So that's the first four steps of my cycle.
Is there a way where socially this can be induced or not? Because I'm thinking, like, with all people, shame has huge consequences on everyone else. Now, In one hand, it's great if a guy gets to a point where, you know, he's suffering so much that he has to do something about it. But I'm thinking, what about sort of like on a social level? Is there a way that society can encourage this? And I'm also thinking in terms of like we're in this era where there's so much talk about women and women's empowerment, and women have been very active in sort of getting what they want and improving their lives. And not just on a sort of material level, but especially I'm thinking a lot about sort of this whole self-care movement and stuff where women are being very vocal about sort of how they matter and their experience matters. And you're not really seeing a parallel with men, you know, less of that sort of like my experience, my well-being. This also matters. Like I also deserve to be seen and recognized and have my sort of wounds tended to. There's been a real lack of that, given that I'm seeing so much of that amongst women right now.
Totally. Well, if you look historically, too, something happened in the 70s and 80s that has impacted today. And so there's some great books about The End of Men, The War Against Boys, Men on Strike, where in the 70s and 80s, rightfully so, there started to be programs for young girls. I use girls specifically to be under 18. Girls were 18 to develop the parts in society that they usually did not have access to, mostly things around STEM, science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. So there was a really strong focus and programs for young girls to equalize them with boys of their age. But there was never an equal program, and I think this is what you're referring to, for boys to deal with their emotional side, to deal with communication, to deal with connective, to deal with, you know, boys are good at team, but also, you know, seeped in competition. So there's been a lack of programs for boys, and these books really illustrate how girls and women are significantly surpassing men in a lot of different areas that really matter, specifically in terms of if you think about college entry or PhD entry, where it was used to be 65% men and 35% women. Now it's 65% women and 35% men. So yes, there's been a lack of programs in the past to enable boys and men to deal with their emotions and learn communication and learn how to empathize and all these things that are so valuable to employers and in society as we move deeper and deeper into the digital age.
I also wanted to ask about the past year. So it's been almost a year since the Me Too movement has gathered so much steam and stuff. Amongst women, there's a lot of talk about sort of women talking about their experiences, also their experiences largely at the hands of men and stuff. Now, I'm wondering, in your own coaching practice, how is that impacting the men who come to see you?
I saw this post on Facebook that really describes it. A man said, "This is the first time in my life where I felt afraid. And then a woman responded, this is the first time in my life where I haven't felt afraid.
Mm. Yeah.
And I think, you know, it was a meme or it was a conversation. I forget exactly what it was, or a screenshot of something, but it really does, it does demonstrate it, because I'm seeing a significant impact of Me Too in terms of men coming to the plate, showing up, being available. Now, I think Me Too is awesome. I'm 100% supporter. I think keep going. I think keep revealing, you know, all these dark things that have happened in society for generations upon generations. Like, I'm a huge fan of it. And men are being scared. They're not asking women on a date. They're afraid to even flirt because of the dynamics and all these things that men took for granted up to a year ago. They have to question. Now, here's the biggest challenge for men is because they're afraid and they're such in a new, unique place, instead of saying, aha, a new mountain to climb, a new adventure, a new challenge, they're actually quitting, stepping back, and giving up. And I see a lot of that in my practice and my research.
So what kind of things are they saying, which kind of indicates that that's what's happening?
Well, you know, at the granular level, I don't know if I should open the door for her. I don't know if I can even ask her out. Don't even know if I can say I like her. Like, what happens if I make a move and then somewhere down the line she posts on Twitter or something about me? I mean, all these things are happening where men are being called out for inappropriate behavior. Now, I think it's great. I want to just make sure that's clear. But men are so now afraid to be inappropriate because we don't really know what appropriate is. And women do not make this any easier for us to truly understand what's appropriate or what's inappropriate. It's sort of like, we want you to be a strong man, but we want you to have feelings. I want you to be kind of the Viking that feels like you're raping me, but you never rape me. And it's so guys are just like, ah, I don't know what to do at what time. And instead of saying, okay, I want to learn how to do this, men are stepping back from the plate.
So, there's always, and this happens in sort of your own personal journeys where like it takes a while to reach equilibrium and stuff. Do you think that that will happen, or do you think that it's a state when they're completely quitting? Because also that is a bit frustrating for women as well, because it's kind of like we want men to be engaged. This is so that you can actually hear what I go through and maybe adjust your behavior, or maybe be more empathetic, or maybe understand more, rather than feeling that like we have to now worry about how the men react. I feel like with women, that's always the problem. It's kind of like, how are men going to react? And then in this moment where women want to be heard, It's like, oh, that's kind of shutting men down.
Well, there's one more side to it that I want to bring up. So I believe that women are finally feeling the space to let out all that rage and anger that's been internal for so long. Like, I wrote an article, a very pro-woman article edited by a professional woman editor in the field, and I got flamed by women just because I was talking about what was happening for men. And the message was, how can you keep talking about men? This is a time for women to speak, and all this anger and rage that happened last fall. And I, you know, what I got from it was, oh, women just need a time to off gas and let out that anger. Okay, that's really healthy. So I think what's going to happen in the next 2 to 5 to 10 years, is there going to be still more releasing of all this generations of pain and angst, more feelings of guys coming out? It's going to be kind of a mess, I think, for at least another 5 or 10 years, to be honest. But after that, I do believe a cleaner forgiveness, a reconnection will occur. But I think it might take a while.
So let's say it's like 5 years of mess for the sake of conversation. Mm-hmm. In this 5 years of mess, when like women are sort of getting all their rage out, which I also think is really important, that's just my view. But in this 5 years of mess, what can men be doing?
Well, hopefully, you know, men will see the status quo and say, this sucks. I miss being engaged with women. The pain of staying the same, of being by themselves with their bros, playing video games, watching porn. Hopefully that'll run out of its novelty and uniqueness. They'll say, all right, the pain of change is less. Let me start to investigate this. You know, I'm writing a book for this very reason. So to give men a pragmatic guide from where they are to where they want to get to, with and improving them along the way, and just saying, yes, it's this, and you can do it better. We can keep doing it better. So my hope is there'll just start to be a movement of men saying, all right, I want to learn. More importantly, I want to listen to women and hear and understand and ask questions and be curious rather than my ego take over. There's just going to be a process of seeing each other, and I think that's where the epic change can happen.
Do you think men can do that for each other? Like, instead of like seeking women to help them with their inner lives, because women don't really
Absolutely.
Have it in them right now.
Yes. Well, my viewpoint is the most successful for me and for other men is to go to another man to what I call crack the guy's ego, to get in there, to break down the initial shell, the facade, you know, all those defenses that men have built. You know, that's really good for a man to do in terms of the initial stages. And that could take a month, that could take a year, that could take 5 years. You know, it really depends on the guy and his upbringing and his pain and his defenses. So, but once the shell is cracked, I think it is a requirement for a woman to provide the fine tuning, the details. Because guys learning about from other guys about women is through that guy's filter. So I think there's value, but the gold, the true gold, is when a woman is willing, as an opportunity, not a need, as an opportunity to put her attention on a guy, and then the guy will grow. So guys to guys first, and then the fine-tuning done by women is my current experience of the best method.
Just as a sort of final thing, would you say there's anything specific that men most feel ashamed about over the past year to do with being male?
I think we have a reaction to the Me Too that's been really interesting. I think there's been a percentage of men, not a very big percentage, a percentage of men have really said, yeah, I did that. Yeah, you know, yeah. That's me. And there's probably shame and feelings around that. Then there's another percentage of men who said, yeah, I didn't do that, but I let that happen. Or I didn't stop my brother from doing that. Or I didn't speak up for a woman's right. Yeah, I kind of was complicit by my inaction to make that better. But then I think there's a larger percentage of men are just like, that's not me. That's, you know, and I don't think they fully embraced that the impact they've had and continue to have on women in today's society. So I think instead of really looking and investigating and feeling and seeing their role, they've built up these walls to block against shame and block against this. So I actually think there's a larger percentage of men who haven't really felt the impact of their experience yet.
But do you think just because you mentioned Me Too, do you think it's been shaming to men? Because something that happens often is as women, when you kind of talk about your experience, you've got to be very delicate in how you do it.
Well, my fantasy hope is that women can just stand, speak the truth, and not worry about a man's ego. I know it's a fantasy, but that's my perfect world. And I think that's required for us to continue as evolve as a species, is women have to feel right to speak their truth regardless of their man's ego. And so as a man, the best thing you can always do is say yes and reward and say thank you for the woman's truth. Now, when a woman speaks her truth and a man feels shame, well, that's on the guy. His reaction to her truth is not her responsibility. It's on him. So I think men are feeling shame from the revelations of Me Too, but that's on the guy and not on the woman in my viewpoint. And so if you feel when I feel shame, it's something inside of me that's off, not what happened. It's not the circumstance. It's me. It's the thing inside of me that wants to up level. So when I feel shame or jealousy or guilt, then I'm like, okay, there's something inside I need to wake up to. So my hope is that women just continue to speak the truth. Men continue to learn to listen. And then we can actually move to the next level of our equality and our relating. And the best nookie that's out there is from two free people interacting. So that's my belief system.
You heard from Rob Kandel on this episode of The Gender Knot.
It was hosted by me. I'm Nasrin Tavakoli-Farr, or Naz in short.
And I'm Jonathan Freeman. Our co-producers are Sam Baker and Jonathan Blackwell.
We'll be back next week with more.
Talk to you later.